What a game. Holy fuck, buds. The Leafs are up 2-1 against the back-to-back cup champs in an absolute beauty of a game. And this is what we expected out of every game this series. But for some reason, it's been blowout central for game one and two. So,
well, also, that's what happens when you have a fucking parade to the penalty box.
Yeah. This is the game where they actually got their shit together as far as discipline. And, you know, except for one, but we'll get there. And I'm just proud of how the boys played tonight. All around.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful. Like, just like at the end of the episode, we're going to have to pick a butter or dud. And I think I know who my dud is, but like also it was hard to choose. But also not that hard to choose.
We probably have the same dud.
Probably.
We'll get there. But they started off on the right note, and they started off early with that early power play. You capitalize on that.
They had the first period that they should have and wanted to have in game two. You know, like if you think about the way the first period went in game two, right? But like they had the power plays and they couldn't bury, and they had lots of chances, but they couldn't bury. And this game, they got the power play and they fucking buried. Morgan Riley.
Yeah. You gotta love Mo Riley getting us going here.
Man, what a fucking beauty. Honestly, when I look at the contract we got him on, I'm like, oh, that's such a beautiful contract. I love it a lot. Thanks.
Buddy took a hometown discount to stay. We love it. But that goal was so huge. Like, just so huge.
It was like 6 seconds left in the PK, too. Like, it's just so big. So big.
Well, it just goes to show that the way you beat Vasilevskiy is you get him moving. You get him moving side to side.
And you get him with a second opportunity. Unless unless you're David Kampf.
Okay, but David Kampf brilliantly used Bogo as a screen and shot it between his legs to beat Vasilevskiy.
I know, but it's just kind of funny that both of his shots have gone in the exact same place pretty much.
but that was on purpose. Like
it's brilliant. Clearly he spent a lot of time with Austin Matthews, but we'll get there.
It was a veteran goal, but yeah, we'll get there. Don't jump to the second period. Come on. Don't take away from my boy, Colin Blackwell, who's already paying dividends in that Giordano trade.
You know what's funny? Because I don't know if you heard this episode of Overdrive, but like I think it was like maybe the Tuesday before the end of the season, right? So it was like before their second last, I think it was before the afternoon before the game against Detroit, right? And it was Overdrive. And Noodles came out with his like playoff preview of like who's on the roster. And he said that Colin Blackwell is a lock. And and fucking O-Dog comes out and he's like, what the heck makes Colin Blackwell a lock? Like, why among all those people, why is Colin Blackwell a lock? He's done nothing to make himself a lock. And then when you look at what he's done in this series so far, obviously, like, not playing a huge role, but does exactly what you want from him. And he, similarly to Alex Kerfoot, just goes wherever you want him to go and will do whatever you want him to do. And then he benefits from a wonderful play from Ilya Lyubushkin, of all people.
Holy fuck. You know, it's really funny because I'm pretty sure all of Leafs Nation had the same reaction where it was Bush coming out of the box and we're like, oh no. We're like,
and then Engvall gives the puck, is like, oh no.
Yeah, we're like 3-on-1, but Bush has the puck here. But I gotta give full credit to Bush because the patience on that play was unbelievable.
It was amazing.
He took the extra couple seconds to see that Engvall was too far gone. Engvall had
run his course. Okay, we can't lowball Engvall here though, because pushing the net like that pulled the defender off of Blackwell. Like,
but it's exactly.
It's perfect. But I'm saying it's like exactly what you do on a 3-on-1. If Engvall doesn't do that, that goal does not happen. period.
No, but it's the recognition from Lyubushkin to know that Engvall is taking that route, that he's no longer a passing option.
100%.
Because a lot of players would have tried to force it to Engvall.
But back to Blackwell, it was good of
him. He was wide fucking open.
I know, but part of why he was wide open is that he identified that Engvall was pushing the net.
Yes.
And he's like, oh, I got to be the high guy. And I think this is a perfect example of defensively sound thinking sets you up for a goal. He's like, oh, Engvall's pushing the net. Our defenseman is about to pass me, is about to go deep in the offensive zone. I got to be the high guy. So he stops early and sits in the slot as the high person in the offensive zone. And then Engvall makes a ridiculous pass and gets a free goal because he's Lyubushkin smart. Made a
ridiculous pass.
That's what I meant. Sorry. Lyubushkin makes the smart defensive pass. And then Colin Blackwell gets a free goal, basically, like a wide open net. Yeah. Free goal just because he's in smart defensive position. And like, this is what Sheldon keeps preaching all fucking year, is like, play smart defensively and the offense will be there because other teams make mistakes. Right. So if you make smart decisions in the defensive mindset, the opportunities will be there. And our team is so good offensively that we can capitalize on said opportunities, regardless of who's on the ice. Right. Matthews didn't even have a point tonight.
He didn't need one.
Matthews did not have a point tonight. And we won the game.
He did have a breakaway and didn't score, which is a little disappointing, but he got two chances.
I know, but there was two things. One, there was one Marner incident and one Matthews incident where both of them had way more time than it seemed like they realized. And both of them rushed their instances and then made a poor choice. Like, Matthew should not have been taking a quick shot like that. He had so much time.
He should have deked.
He should have deked. Like Vasilevsky was so far out.
He was just at the top.
Like, with how nasty Matthew's hands are, I was like, bro, you got to fucking deke that. You got to fucking deke that. And then he takes a shot. And it's like,
well, maybe he felt the pressure from the defenseman and made a bit of a panic play. Right?
Yeah, but that's my point. Is that, like, even though the defenseman was there, if you look at the replay, he still had so much space. He did not need to force the shot like he did, which then limited his options on the rebound.
Yeah.
And Marner had a similar situation, I think, probably 7 minutes earlier. So, as like, as far as things for them to take into game four, it's like, it's great that we won, but you both are so talented and so fast that there is instances in this game, even though we're playing the Tampa Bay Lightning, where you have way more time than you think you do, you know? And if you think about, you know, decisions they made as really young kids, where like they're giving the puck away in those instances or making a faster decision than they should, right? Like, these are the times where you're now maturing as a player, where you should hold on to it longer than you think because you have the ability to make a play. You know, and like, that's that really step up and part of growth. I mean, obviously I'm not an NHL player, but I think about my own growth as a hockey player, right? Like, growing up, I was not a goal scorer. I was a sound defensive player who hit the shit out of every other teams and that I would score occasionally. And then I got sent down to single A and I just fucking started I just started scoring a lot of goals, but I wasn't used to scoring a lot of goals. So I had to completely adjust my game to account for the fact that, like, oh fuck, I have a lot more space on the ice. I can make decisions. And then even more so when I got into men's league and I got bigger and stronger. And sure, yes, it's men's league and you like it is what it is. But even then, like, as I got more used to my height and my weight and you mature as a player, you realize the things you can do with your body without even having to exert any additional effort. Like, and I know you've felt the same experience, right? It's like when you get into your mid-20s, you know, you come into your own, you come into your body, you start to feel and know what you can do with it. Right. So when you're then leaning on someone in the offensive or the defensive zone, you know how much you can put into it to really, like, not lose your balance, but also, like, kind of fuck with them. You know what I mean? And like, that's something that Matthews and Marvin have both improved on a lot this year. But because they're facing the defending champs, I feel like they kind of almost forgot that they had learned that lesson this game. It's like, sometimes you have more time than you think. So like, take that extra second. And in Matthews' instance, it would be fucking deke the shit out of the goalie. Your hands are disgusting. And in the Marner's instance, it's just like, take an extra second and make the smarter pass.
Well, dude, let's be honest here. This game had nothing to do with Matthews and Marner. This was all secondary scoring.
This was all Maple Leafs depth showing up.
Except secondary scoring.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm saying. We got Morgan Riley, Colin Blackwell, David Camp, and Ilya Mikheyev.
The two guys we were calling out at the end of last episode combined for both empty net goals.
Well, no. The one guy we called out.
Oh, no, he's been called. Well, that's a whole other thing. I'm saying as far as beyond the big four, the two guys we called out, Mikheyev and Engvall, combined for the last two goals. There's still one guy that has not shown up yet, and we'll get there.
Okay, so that David Kampf goal, as I said, what a fucking beauty shot. And he used Bogo as a screen. He shot it between his legs, and that's how he fooled Vasilevsky. Vasilevsky never saw the shot
coming. I also just kind of, I low-key love that it's against Bogosian.
Yeah, I know, right? what I found fucking hilarious was you see Michael Bunting going at Bogo. And yeah. I'm just thinking, I was like, Bogo has like a personal relationship with almost every other guy in this team. But Bunting's a new face. He's like, I don't know you. I don't give a fuck who you are.
But the other funny thing apart that is that like, I don't like, Bogosian would destroy Bunting in a fight.
Oh, absolutely.
Like he would get absolutely punnelled. Bunting
will still stick his nose
in it. Yeah, but that's the thing is like, Bunting has no fear. No fear at all. He's like, fuck it. I'm going full head at the seam at you. Fuck
well, he's
you,
like, chances are we're not going to actually fight, but I'm going to get into the scrum.
Yeah, exactly. And like, as much as it sucked to let that power play goal in the second period,
dude, that was
a ridiculous shot.
It was, but that was 100% on Alex Kerfoot.
True.
He froze at the offensive line. When
that
should have
got deep. That should have got deep. 100% that should have
got
deep.
It led right to that play. And, you know, it was a bar down. One timer,
incredible shot! Incredible shot.
Credit where credit's due. Like,
that but 100%, I do agree with that. I actually had forgotten, but you're 100%. Kerfoot had the chance to get that puck deep, and then made him.
He froze. He was deer in the head.
No, what he? No, it's not even that he froze. He made an offensive-minded play. He didn't think he was going to get pushed as hard from behind, and thought he had more time than he did, so he could make an offensive play. And then because he did, he underestimated the defense, gives the puck away, and ends up in the back of your net. But like that Ross Colton shot, that's about as perfect of a shot as you're going to make. So anyone who tries to throw shade at Jack. Like, that is not a goal that's savable by goalie. There's not a single goalie in the league that's stopping that shot.
Well, for one, that was on the power play. And two, that was a beautiful pass from Sergachev to Colton. And, I mean, that was bar down. Like, what do you expect him to do? Like, that was Ovi's office right there.
It's kind of funny that tonight was kind of the battle of the depth. Because if you look at the people who scored for Tampa... Ross Colton, Andre Palat, from Sergachev and Palat and Killorn and McDonough. And then for the Leafs, it's Riley from Bunting and Marner, Blackwell from Labushkin and Engvall. Engvall had a 3-point night, casual. David Kamp scored. Mikheyev from Engvall. So literally all the points other than like Riley and Marner are secondary point.
Can I just give a shout out to Pierre Engvall for the selflessness on that first empty netter?
Oh, fuck yeah.
He had all day to put that in himself, but the last second passes it over to Mickey.
You know what, though? I think the part of why he did that was that, like, it was, like, seconds before, Mikheyev made, like, a crazy, like, diving defensive play, and then Engvall managed to get the puck out right after, and he's like, oh, This guy just fucking worked his ass off to get this puck out. I'm not fucking taking this goal here. Mickey, have it.
Mickey had a hell of a game.
Yeah, he did, especially on the PK
game.
Especially on the PK,
all over it.
Like, they highlighted in the intermission, and like, my God.
One thing I want to get into is one of the biggest criticisms we had after game two was block shots. They were only at 8. They had 17 tonight.
Did I not call that out last episode? Did I not call that out?
They're shouting you out right now.
They over Dover doubled their block shots and they won. Weird how that works out.
Compared to Tampa's 9.
Weird how that works out. Weird.
But also, we had more power plays.
Yep. But it was also one power play goal each, so they kind of canceled each other out anyway.
Yeah, but we had 5, they had 3. It's still not even as big a disparity as that was for game two. So
36 hits from the Maple Leafs, which, like, while they still get out hit, that's a lot of hits from the Maple Leafs.
Well, they controlled the play for majority of the game, except for, like, the last 5 minutes of the third.
Agreed. And, like, it's always nice to make Victor Hedman -3.
Yeah.
Man. And how is, like, Vasilevsky lets in 3 goals and still has a 9-12?
Because he still made 34 saves.
I know, but, like, fuck you, man. That's back-to-back games where he's letting 3 goals and the guy still has a fucking 9-12.
I mean,
he had like the same... But, like, every time Jack Campbell lets in 3 goals, it's like he has, like, an 888 or, like, an 860. And it's like,
I mean, he made the same amount of saves as Jack. Oh, no, that's shots against.
I was going to say, it was 36-34 Leafs. Like, how did he have the same amount of saves? That doesn't make any sense. Actually, they did have the same amount of saves.
No.
Right. No, they did.
32-31.
I mean, according to TSN, they both had 34 saves.
No, Kian, they each made 34 saves.
No, you're right. It's shots against.
Yeah.
Because Leafs have 2.
It's 32.
Leafs had 2 empty net shots. That's why.
Exactly.
Right. So they actually equaled in shots on goal against the goalie, but there was the 2 extra shots.
Exactly, and that skews the numbers. Yes.
Yeah, that was throwing me off. All right. Well, I mean, the Leafs had a very disciplined game. There was definitely instances where, like, the Leafs should have got a penalty.
Oh, well.
But the only... One second. But there was one instance in the third period, all right, where fucking, I think it was Patrick Maroon, but it might have been Braden Point. I don't remember. But it was in the slot in the Leafs defensive zone where they were just holding Lyubushkin's stick. Like one hand out in the open, just like full blown holding it, almost ripping it out of his hands. Nothing. So, like, as much as, yeah, there was definitely calls that could have been made on the Leafs, like, Tampa still got away with shit.
Oh, yeah. Did you not see Vasilevsky play the puck in the no play zone?
So that's at least so there's 2 penalties that we've already called out that definitely should have been called.
But I'm not here to complain about penalties because we won.
You know how much worse that makes last episode look? Okay, we only complained our reffing and losses.
But also there wasn't the same discrepancy. Let's call it there. And a lot of they had 2 delay of game penalties. Like, that's a black and white call. They call every time.
True.
So
I will say the Eric Jernak penalty at the end of the period was kind of soft.
Yeah.
It was that was pretty soft.
The one penalty I'm really upset about was the Justin Hall one. I think that was so avoidable. I saw it coming a mile away. And it's funny because I was watching with Morgan and we're both like, don't take a penalty on this exact play. And what does he do? He wraps him. Like, all you had to do was go on the inside because he was right-handed. The stick was on the right side. You go on the right side, lift the stick, prevent the shot. That's all you had to do.
That was a pretty classic Justin Hall play.
I know. And maybe it's because
But at the same time, if you're trying to put it into comparison, does Timothy Liljegren make a better decision in that position? And I don't know if he does.
Yeah,
I feel like he probably makes the same decision and then we end up in the same circumstance. So at the end of the day, like, I don't hold that too much against Justin Hall, especially since the Leafs killed it off. And it presented... No, didn't they not? Oh, you're no, right.
They didn't.
True. But it prevented a scoring chance in the moment. And, like, if you put Timothy Liljegren in there instead, like, I think that penalty still happens.
Well, the reason I'm upset about it is because he had so much time to make a different decision versus, let's compare it to the Muzzin penalty, where, yes, that was a hook, but he likely prevented a goal.
I mean, not really, though, because the hook happened after he shot it.
I mean, and it was also like a split second.
I mean, that to be honest, shouldn't have been a penalty. He fucking like tapped him on the hands.
You might have been able to let that go, but you know, it by definition, it is a hook.
He had already shot the puck. It was pretty soft. I mean, at that point in the third period of a game, like that's a pretty suspect call to make in the playoffs, where like the guy's already shot the puck and he barely taps the hands, and you're gonna call that as a hook. Like, I don't know. But like, what was really awesome though is that even though Tampa scored early in the third to make it 3-2, the Leafs didn't seem phased. Sheldon Keefe made a really smart timeout call.
Yeah, I really like the Sheldon Keefe timeout call.
His second really smart timeout call that have both paid out in both what was some would say as, you know, I guess a judgmental timeout calls. Right.
Well, at the end of the day, it comes down to recognizing your own team and recognizing when things are about to go off the rails.
Yeah. And he called it before it went fully off the rails.
Exactly. And that is the perfect time to use your timeout, because what's the point of calling it when it's too late?
Exactly. Which I find is like the biggest thing with coaches in the NHL is that they call, and like this one, I think Babcock was the worst for this, was that like calling a timeout when it's already too late. When it's like you've let in three goals in a row. It's like, okay, now I'm calling a timeout to try and calm things down. It's like, you should have called a timeout after the second one.
Yeah.
If you let in two goals in a minute, you should call a timeout.
Absolutely. If nothing else but to kill their momentum.
Exactly. Like that happens in the NBA all the time. Like, I think this is the one thing I would give like, a lot of credit to NBA coaches is, like, because they have so many timeouts, like, they see a run happening, and they're just like, nope, call timeout. Get the fuck out of here with that shit. I want to reset. And, like, that obviously it's different in the NHL. They only have the one timeout. But there's definitely instances where that same logic should apply. And that's what the Leafs did there. It was like the Tampa Bay Lightning are on a fucking run. We're in the third period of a game where we're now only up by one, and we need to close this out for 15 minutes. And they fucking did it. And I wasn't really too nervous at any given point, which was kind of crazy.
I was pretty nervous when it was 3-2, and I was nervous until John Cooper pulled the goalie, and I was like, really?
It was funny because like I was literally thinking earlier in the period, I was like, please, God, Leafs, just make it to the point where they can empty net, because we can score an empty net.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Get Vasilevskiy out of the goal.
And I was, when I saw him do it with 2:20 left, I'm like, really? You're only down by one.
Oh, he's down by two, though.
No, he was down by one when he pulled the goalie first. It was 3-2.
Oh, you're right.
It was 2:20 left, and he pulled it. I'm like, 240? Really?
2:40 left, actually.
Really? Oh, so it's even worse.
Because Mikheyev, actually, it was before that, because Mikheyev's goal was at 18:20, right? And it was pulled at least a minute before that. So it might have been 17-something. So
I don't think it was a minute before that. Like, we scored very shortly after they pulled.
So maybe it was 2:20.
I'm almost certain it was 2:20, because I was so confused as to why he would do that. I'm like, that's what you do when you're down by two.
Yeah.
But why the fuck would you do that when you're down by one in a playoff game where you have all the momentum right now? You shot yourself in the foot, man.
I mean, everyone makes mistakes, and you love it when a back-to-back champion makes mistakes so we can advantage.
If it were me, the earliest I'd be pulling is like 1:30 maybe.
Yeah, and that's like only if you have like a defensive zone draw. But that was the thing, is that they got an offensive zone draw. And they were like, oh, I'm going to pull the goalie now.
Mm. No, we're too good at faceoffs, man.
And yeah, that's where the faceoff thing comes into mind. And so as much as we want to throw shade at that one dude.
JT, who also did not have a great night on faceoffs.
He was really good in the defensive zone on faceoffs. He had a tough night offensively in faceoffs because he lost a lot on the power play.
But if you look at his defensive zone numbers, he was actually really good. But I do agree, overall, not great.
But the Leafs win. The Leafs win. Yeah. We got fucking home ice back.
Yeah, that's the big
thing. We got fucking home ice back. Period. Like, regardless of what happens tomorrow on Sunday, the Leafs got home ice back. And now, the Leafs have the chance to go full Kawhi on their ass and take both.
Take both. So you got to have that killer mentality.
Just like I said last episode, it's like, why would you go to Tampa the mentality we got to take one? Go there and try to fucking take two.
I mean, you come home
and like you show them, especially because like, let's be real, the fucking the Tampa crowd had nothing. Nothing on the Leafs crowd.
Oh, they not tried, even close.
They tried really hard during anthems when they were trying to sing the national anthem.
Dude, they didn't even try that hard. They flubbed the first fucking half of that. It was weak as shit.
But man, that's my point. Is that, like, they tried, but they failed.
And failed.
Failed miserably. That you cannot match the Maple Leafs fucking energy. So if you manage to go out there and win game four and come back up 3-1.
That's huge.
And you come into a fucking rocking game five. You think those guys are not going to be fucking shitting their pants a little bit?
I think so.
Just a little bit, not a lot. They're defending champs.
Just a couple skin marks.
A fucking little bit, because I can tell you that over their two runs to the Stanley Cup Finals, neither of those instances were they down 3-1 in a series.
Nor were they dealing with a full crowd like the Maple Leafs crowd.
But also, how about the fact that the Leafs have now scored, 12 goals on Vasilevsky in three games?
So he is human.
When he let in that amount of goals in like full series last year,
it's been impressive how we've been able to beat him. But that's it. They've figured out the recipe, and let's get him moving and keep it. I loved Spezza's play tonight. He put every fucking thing on net. And he didn't matter where he was, he was putting it on net.
You could tell that Spezza was like, I ain't not fucking coming out of the lineup again. And like, as much as he did not play very much, like at all,
he made some things happen, because out of all those shots, there were rebounds, there were scoring. Like
he played 8 minutes and 23 seconds, but they were a noticeable 8 minutes and 23 seconds. Went 3-for-4 in the 3-for-4 in the faceoff dot. So like
that's,
70.
Well, 80, that's it. Spezza is another great faceoff guy.
Two shots on goal and a hit in 8 minutes and 23 for Spezza. Love it. Love it. And your line mate on the fourth line gets a goal in Blackwell, which like Spezza was on the ice and contributing for that, even though he didn't get the goal. So like, I mean, I said this after our first episode, is like, there's no chance we see fucking Clifford back in the series.
I said that as well.
And after game two, on those two brutal penalties by Simmons. I don't think we see him again in the series. And after this night from Justin Hall, even though it wasn't actually that bad, if you think about it objectively, not a bad night from Justin Hall for his first game in the playoffs. I wouldn't be surprised to see T. Liljegren back in.
Yeah, because Liljegren wasn't exactly playing poorly.
But to be frank, I actually do think Justin Hall will stay in for game four, because I think Keith will give him two games. And if game four is still not good for Justin Hall, then Liljegren will be back for game five. But
isn't it great to have this defensive depth to be able to do this?
And then the fact that like that's not even bringing into the fact that we still have Sandin and Chiellini in the press box.
Right.
Ready to go.
He was arguably better than both of them.
Except he's left-handed.
Yeah, well, that's it.
You can't play the right side, so that's the difference. But I mean, at the end of the, and it was funny. I was having this conversation at my end of week meeting, and they're like, "Kian, how are you feeling about this series?" And like about the thing, I was like, "I'm stressed out." But they're like, and then they're like, "Oh, well, yeah, but like the Leafs never win. They'll never get that done." And my comment back to them was like, "We had the exact same thought process about the Raptors."
Very true. They'll never get past LeBron. They'll never.
We started cheering for the Raptors about 2014. And we watched five years of absolute just getting wrecked in the second round every year.
Like
and
first when round I
for
first,
a few of those years.
When I first bought in for the Raptors, it was when they lost in seven the playoffs to the Nets. Yeah, yeah, to the Nets. We were in Jurassic Park for that.
Yep.
And you know that stung, and I'm like, it hurt just as much as a Leafs playoff loss. Like it sucks, but you got to lose to win.
And this is my point to my coworkers. Like, you know, we all there was always this sentiment that the Leafs, the Raps are always going to lose. The Leafs are always going to lose. We're Toronto. We don't get that shit. And the Raps proved that is complete fucking bullshit.
Yeah. Can I give a shout out to Masai Ujiri, who,
oh fuck yeah,
I oh, man, believe
always
is that is the
in Masai
the
we trust.
Heartbeat, the heartbeat of this city when it comes to sports, because he was the first one to say out loud, I have championship aspirations. I'm going to make this a championship team. And he fucking did it. But then you hear him in his press conference. He's like, how about those Leafs? Hey, championship. That's what exactly what Masai said. I'm like,
true.
This fucking guy, I love him. I absolutely love him. He gets the Toronto sports market. He knows how much the city suffered in the sports world, but he never stops believing that it can be done. He knows it can be done.
And he knows how to build for it. And like, I can guarantee that Kyle Davis has spent time.
Oh, just brushing shoulders with him. Oh, absolutely.
You know, like it's just, it's a winning culture. And like, as much as we want to say it started with the Raptors, it actually didn't.
It started with the Jays.
No, it did not.
The back-to-back World Series.
Dude, that's so long ago.
So?
I'm talking about current shit, not fucking things that happened not even in your lifetime. I'm sorry. If we're talking about like current Toronto.
Okay, sports, then you're talking TFC Argos.
Exactly. It's TFC that started it all. It's TFC that started it all. TFC won the MLS before everything. When we're talking about when everything started to change in Toronto sports, right back in like 20, I think they won in what, 2015, I want to say. But like in 2015, you know, the Leafs hired Brendan Shanahan. And in time, Brendan Shanahan did the scorched earth move on the Leafs. They brought in Masai Ujiri, who did a similar thing in the Raptors and was like, we need to get rid of shit and build. And we built TFC built for a championship and got it. Raptors built for a championship.
It was 2017.
Okay, there you go. Thanks for giving me a year to work with. But still, 2017, 2019, 2022.
Fingers crossed. Let's exercise our round one demons first, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, I want to get across the fact that we, as a fan base, as a Toronto sports fan base, we for the longest time didn't believe it was possible. We believed that the Raptors would lose. We believed that the Leafs were not good enough and they would always choke. And I think maybe it's time for us to stop believing in the negative and believing in the possibility of the positive. And look at the past to help predict the future. We have two championships in this city in the last 10 years from other major sports.
Three, if you include the Grey Cup.
True. Most people wouldn't, but true.
Yeah.
But true. All right. So three major championships in the last 10 years. And the Leafs can join that. They have the talent to do it. But it's a matter of getting through their demons first. And what better way to do that again against the defending champs?
Well, that's it, man. All right, man. Let's.
So how can they do this for game four?
Let's get into our buds and duds.
Mm-hmm.
Or should we do like we did game one and do a three stars of the game and then a dud?
No, let's do buds and duds. This has been not a blowout. It wasn't a perfect game like game one. Game one was perfect. There wasn't any bad parts that you could point out. We can't say the same thing about tonight.
Who's your bud?
My bud? Is Pierre Engvall from dud to bud, which he's done multiple times this season. And as we've continued to say, the dud has powers.
How about that gazelle leap over Stamkos?
Like, guy has 3 point night from Pierre Engvall. Sure, two of those were empty nets, but that Colin Blackwell goal, that's all Pierre Engvall. Smart pass. True, but smart pass to Lyubushkin, him driving the net to create the opening for the Lyubushkin pass. Pierre Engvall creates that goal. So Pierre Engvall, three-point night, three assists, doesn't get rewarded with a goal, partially because the guy's like the most selfless person ever, has a fucking breakaway on an empty net and passes it. Like, what the fuck? Pierre Engvall, butt of the night for game three for me. How about you?
I think my butt's going to go to David Kampf.
Love it. Love it. Big shout out to Kyle Dubas for signing the guy with one goal.
Well, that's
he's got three goals in the fucking playoffs.
He's been unreal.
Two goals.
We expect him to bring the defensive side, which he did tonight in a big way. He made some big blocks, big deflections at big times, but also bringing that offensive element takes him to another level. And just the veteran skill to use the defenseman as a screen.
And 13 for 22 on draws tonight.
Love it. Like, Kampf has been an absolute beauty pickup, and he is my butt of the night.
Love it. 100% deserved. Amazing. Like, what a fucking pickup. What a pickup. All right. Dud.
Justin Hall.
John Tavares.
Ooh. I mean, you know, we already kind of talked about my reasoning why.
Yeah, like John Tavares. Like, dude, you're even. You're minus one in a game you won 5-2. You went 6-for-15 on draws. Only had one shot, one hit, one block. Like, 17 minutes of ice time, that ain't good enough from our captain. Like, if you were just another guy on this team, like, let's say the C was on Austin Matthews, I would be fine with the game that John Tavares has had so far this series. No, but you're the fucking
carries weight.
But you're the fucking captain of this team. And the simple fact is, there has been moments in this series so far where we need a fucking goal, and he has not done anything to make it happen. So that's what I'm expecting from our captain next game, or at least some of these. It's like something.
He's got to get it on the score sheet.
You got to make something happen and like show that you are the leader of this fucking team. Because as it stands right now, Mitch Marner is be like, yo, guys, this is my fucking team. I'm making it happen. Because it ain't Austin Matthews. Let's be real. The best player on the Leafs so far in this playoffs has been Mitch Marner, which is a first, actually, in this tenure. Right? If you think about it, the first run in the playoffs against Washington, it was Nylander. One of the playoffs against Boston was Matthews. One of them was against Boston, it was Riley. And then no one played good against Columbus. And then last year, it was Nylander and Kerfoot. So there hasn't been a series where Marner is the dominant player. And so far in this series, Marner has been the dominant player.
Yeah, a few of those blocks are definitely credited to Marner. But
John Tavares, as the captain of this team, cannot be rolling around with what? Does he have two assists in the series?
Well, dude, you're giving the rant that I gave last game, and I expected more, but I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, not good. Just not good enough.
Not good enough.
Not good enough. Whoop-tsh. So that's my dud for this game.
Fair enough. Predictions for game four.
Well, sorry, who was your dud?
Justin Hall.
Right. And you already gave the reasons for that. That's why you're skipping on. Cool.
Yeah.
Predictions for game four. I think game four is going to be a weird one. I'm saying 5-4 Leafs.
I'm going to say 2-1 Leafs.
Ooh, we're picking opposites. I love it. Either one ends, Leafs up 3-1. So yeah. Go Leafs, go.
And hopefully we will be in Maple Leaf Square if we can get those tailgate
tickets. We fucking will be in Maple Leaf
Square. We have to be up and ready to go.
They usually don't send those emails out till like mid-afternoon anyways. We'll be fine.
10-12 is when they come out.
Well, I'll be up and I'll be fucking better on be it.
Fucking up.
we're getting fucking spots. We're definitely being at the square.
So everyone come say hi and let's fucking have a blast and watch.
Let's get it. After.
So, I mean, an amazing game from the boys. We're up 2-1 in the series against the defending champs. Pretty great. And I just want to say I'd love to hear the Go Leafs go at the end of the game there in Tampa. It's pretty beautiful. And so for all those people in Tampa Bay or Florida, I should say in general, that have tickets to game 4, because I know you do. I know you do. There's some rich fucking Leaf fans down there that are going to be at game 4. I know you fuckers do. And so I fucking better hear you. I don't want to hear any of this let's go Bolts bullshit. I want to hear more soup chants. I want to hear more cheers. I want to hear more go Leafs go. Because at the end of the day, when you look at Maple Leaf Square and you know all these people back at home like ourselves, we always want to hear go Leafs go.